Now, if we are really aware of someone, if we are really aware of, if we really know, truly know, the person to whom we are speaking, then we shall also know what it is that they need. And this brings us to the third level of right speech, or third stage of communication, that we should speak that which is useful. Now, not useful just in the ordinary sense, but useful in the sense of what promotes the growth, especially the spiritual growth of the person to whom we are speaking. What helps them, in the language or in the words of the Dhammapada, to become peaceful. Now, this useful speech doesn't necessarily consist in specifically spiritual instruction. It doesn't mean that you've got to be talking about nirvana or about right means of livelihood or anything of that sort. But it means that through your awareness of that other person, through your appreciation of their needs, you speak, or you are in such a way, of such a kind, that they are stimulated and their growth is promoted. The ostensible subject can be anything you like. It hardly matters. What it really means is, we may say, that we should speak to people in such a way that they are raised in the scale of being and of consciousness and not lowered. In other words, by speaking what is useful, we mean speaking in such a way that the people to whom we speak become really more alive. If we can't sort of inspire them spiritually or stimulate them spiritually, at least we can be positive and we can be appreciative, not all the time negative and critical. You know that some people you meet have a sort of very depressing effect upon you. Whatever you want to do, they've got a reason for not doing it. They always sort of dampen your enthusiasm, just like a sort of wet day. Sometimes we describe such people colloquially as being a wet week. And this is what sometimes they are. They have a sort of very depressing and negative effect upon us. So this is very bad. So we should watch ourselves also in this way and try to be positive, try to be appreciative, and try to be constructive. I remember some time ago talking to somebody about someone whose name at least many of you know, and that is Lama Govinda. And it did occur to me while I was speaking to this person about Lama Govinda that in the course of the time that I've known him, which is now I think practically 20 years, that we had quite a bit of contact and correspondence, I think I can say that I never remember any occasion on which Lama Govinda was negative, or in which he really disapproved of anything, or even criticized anything. Whatever one suggested or put up, or whatever he commented upon, it was always in a very positive and constructive and appreciative sort of way. And even if confronted by a rather unpromising sort of situation, he would still manage somehow to be quite positive about it and not negative. And this is, I would say, a very rare sort of quality, a very rare faculty, and one which we should do our utmost to cultivate. Even if we can't speak usefully to anyone in the full sense of stimulating and promoting their spiritual growth, at least we can be positive, at least we can be constructive, at least we can be appreciative and even creative. If in addition to this, within this sort of context, within this sort of framework, we can actually give some sort of spiritual help or spiritual guidance in words, what we call the gift of the Dharma in Buddhism, well, so much the better. But even here, there's no question of giving it, as it were, in the abstract, just as a form of cold words, as it were, but only in the preceding context of truthfulness and of love. Because it's only then that the instruction becomes really effective. Now, if we are aware of another person's needs, and if we are concerned to provide for them, which means thinking about the other person, then we shall tend to forget about ourselves, tend to think less about ourselves. Just as, say, a mother does when she's caring for her baby. She doesn't think about herself at that time. So in this way, we come to the fourth and the deepest level of right speech or stage of communication, and this is that right speech or perfect speech promotes concord or harmony. Now, this is not just agreement, mental agreement, intellectual agreement. It's not just sharing the same ideas, following the same religion, accepting the same philosophy, belonging to the same political party. It's much more than this. It really means a sort of mutual helpfulness, as we may describe it, leading to a sort of mutual self-transcendence. This means you, as it were, think about somebody else's needs, so much so that you forget yourself, or tend to forget about yourself. That person, on the other hand, is preoccupied with your needs, so much so that he tends or she tends to forget about their own self, tends to transcend their own self. So in this way you get each preoccupied with the needs of the other, each forgetting himself or herself, and therefore you get a situation arising which I've described as mutual helpfulness leading to mutual self-transcendence. So there's a sort of reciprocity of services and helpfulness, but within a context of continually decreasing selfishness and increasing selflessness. And this is really what we mean when we speak of right speech or perfect communication promoting concord, bringing people closer together by making them, as it were, transcend themselves in mutual helpfulness. So in this way we come to what may be described as the very perfection of right speech, the perfection of communication. This occurs, we may say, when understanding is so perfect that nothing needs to be said. You all know that when you meet someone for the first time, there's a lot to talk about. As you get to know them better, you tend to talk less. So therefore it logically follows, we may say in a way, that the better you know someone, the less there is to talk about. But the closer you come, the less there is to say. And in this way, right speech culminates eventually in silence. Now from all this, from all these considerations, we can say that right speech is by no means the simple matter that it might at first have appeared. We can perhaps begin to understand why in the Dhammapada the Buddha has said, "Better than a collection of 1,000 meaningless words is one word full of meaning on hearing which one is at peace." So having reminded ourselves of that, perhaps this speech of mine also had better culminate in silence, in the hope that, to some extent, as some of you at least have become, in the words of the Buddha, peaceful.